Welcome to Sentinel Watch, a production of the Christian Science Sentinel, where we look at life through a spiritual lens. I'm Amy Richmond. I'm happy to say that Martine Blackler from Uvongo, KwaZulu-Natal, South Africa, is here in the studio with me today. Martine is a Christian Science practitioner. That's someone who's available to the public to pray for them and witness healing. Martine, I'm so glad you're in Boston and able to join us on Sentinel Watch.
Absolutely wonderful to be here. Thank you, Amy.
That's so great. I have so many questions for you. I've been really looking forward to this conversation. First, I want to start off by having you tell us a little bit about how you became journal listed, that's advertising in the Christian Science Journal, as a Christian Science practitioner.
Well, it wasn't actually a choice. It was more like a nudge, and then it became more like a kick in the backside. And eventually, I just sat there one day and said, why haven't you done this?
Really?
And it's, you know, about 2 to 3 years after going through class, I just decided it's time. And you get that nudge. You get that spiritual nudge, for want of a better word.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you went through class. Could you explain what that is?
A primary class instruction. It's a 12-day course that we take with an authorized teacher of Christian Science. And then that opens the doors for you to become a Christian Science practitioner. Not that we're not practitioners anyway, but at least then you now have more of the tools to become a practitioner.
Right. Were you getting calls from people wanting you to pray for them?
Yes, absolutely. That's what actually got me started in the practice, because I was taking calls, and the first few calls that came in, I would just say, why are you calling me? I don't know what I'm doing. Find someone else.
Really?
And then eventually I would pray for them, and they would come and say, oh, this is wonderful. Thank you. I'm so grateful. I'm healed. And I'm thinking, maybe I can do this.
Yeah.
And that's how it started.
I know for me, one of the things that I learned early on wasn't really about me healing. It was really about witnessing what God had already done.
That's right.
Yeah. So that makes it a little easier.
Mm.
I mean, you have to take it seriously. You have to,
obviously,
pray for the people who call you, but it is a help to know that it's not us.
No, it isn't us. Healing is not recovery. Healing is discovery. It's discovering who we are and the natural perfection of man made in God's image.
Right.
But yes, it is God that does the healing.
Why do we need to call practitioners sometimes in the first place?
It's not like a halfway house. It's not a medium between us and God. But maybe at times you need that extra spiritual thought of the practitioner to be able to work with you, because the practitioner doesn't actually work for you. The practitioner works with you to show you the spiritual reality and the perfection of your being as God's child. And sometimes there's so much fear or pain or otherwise that people go into a flat panic. And they don't know where to turn. They don't know how to think. They need somebody that will think clearly for them and help them to see their own spiritual perfection.
I like that. I remember one time that I called a practitioner for help for me, and I said, you know, my tale of woe. And then I said, can you heal me? And she said, no. And I went, oh, no. And she said, but God can. You know, and that's such a relief, really, because God's the constant. Mm. If it's a person, they may or may not be in your life at some point.
That's right.
But God always will be.
Nothing we do comes from us. Jesus said to us, of mine own self, I can do nothing. So that is the way to start. You start with God. You start with listening.
Right.
You listen. That hymn of Mary Baker Eddy, the discoverer and founder of Christian Science, one of her hymns, Shepherd, show me how to go, or the hillside steep. It's a question of listening and following.
Right.
And those steps are given to us by God. And then the healing comes naturally.
So maybe you could help our listeners understand a little bit about your practice of Christian Science. When you get a call from somebody who wants some help, what do you do?
I listen, not to the patient particularly, because you get a whole litany of woes across the telephone. But normally under that is a cry for help, a broken heart that needs healing, somebody asking for the Christ. And then you listen and you say, Father, what is this dear one really struggling with? I obviously mean my heavenly Father, Father, Mother, God, as we have in Christian Science. What is the patient really asking? And the answers come. They usually do come. Sometimes not the ones you want. And you're thinking, wow, where does this come from? But it's always relevant and it's always exactly what they need.
That's great. So you mentioned the Christ.
Yes.
Can you maybe explain that? Because I know in Christian Science, that term, the Christ, is not Jesus.
No.
Though Jesus is called Christ Jesus or Jesus the Christ.
Well, the Christ is, for want of a better word, it is the expression of healing that Jesus had. And we have that same healing power as Jesus had. So we have the Christ as well. We are enabled by the Christ to heal. So that to me is the encapsulated Christianity, if you like. That is the Christ.
Yeah, right. You've been a guest on Sentinel Watch a couple of times recently, and in a follow-up conversation that you and I had, you mentioned that you had a period of time where you got quite an onslaught of people calling you for help. And I'm wondering if you could tell me how you deal with that.
Sometimes I get overwhelmed, and then I just sit there and I say, if there is a demand, then there has to be a supply. Whether it's a demand for healing, a demand for supply, a demand for health, whatever, then the supply has to come first. The supply is there first. So all I'm doing is I'm just witnessing that supply and demand, and that then turns into healing.
Do you find that if you're praying for multiple people, is there sometimes one idea that helps you, or is it different for every single case?
No, it's different. It's different for everyone. But sometimes, let me give you an example. Before I went into the practice, and I was quite convinced I was not ready for this and I was not going to do this. No, it's not for me. And I have learned now that you never say to your Father, I don't want to, because the minute you say that, things happen. And the day after I had this conversation with my father and I'd said to him, I'm not doing this. I don't want to be in the practice. The day after, I got 15 calls, one after the other.
Wow.
And I don't know where these people even got my number, but they were all different cases. One was somebody with a problem, you know, when they type too much on the computer and they get this
carpal tunnel.
Yeah, that man who phones me out of the blue. I don't even know who he was. He phones me out of the blue and says that his wife is in hospital and they're going to be doing this operation and please help. And the thought came straight away that it is not us who do the work. It is God that does the work. So whatever work she was doing on her computer, well, it wasn't her. And I put the phone down. And 20 minutes later, he phones me back and he says, well, I don't know what you did, but the doctor's not going to be operating and she's now on her way out. Fine.
So that's great.
Next 10 minutes, another call and another call and another call. And I mean, there were 15 like that, but they were just boom, 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 one after the other. And they were just quick healings like that. And after the 15th one, I eventually said, okay, fine, I give up. I'm ready for the practice. That's fine. I know, I understand. And the call stopped.
Hmm.
So that was virtually my entry into...
You needed that experience to know that you could move forward.
That I could move forward, but it wasn't me, as you said, doing the healing.
No. But it was,
I would never have known how to do this.
Yeah, but it was kind of a nice connection there that not only were you helping these other people by witnessing what God was doing for them, but it was helping you.
It was helping me.
Yeah.
But it was showing me, this is what you have to do.
Yeah, that's
great. You don't have a choice. This is your path. Walk in it.
Walk in it. Okay.
So
that's great.
That was my introduction to the practice.
That's great. So I know from that follow-up conversation that we had that you've learned some stuff, both personally and in your practice, about healing chronic problems. And you talked about one of those big chronic problems in the first show that you actually were talking with David Brown, mm-hmm. but you shared an experience where you were healed of something that was a chronic problem. And I think a lot of us want to know more about how do you heal something that's been in your experience for so long?
Well, time is not something that God knows about. Time is mortal. Mm. So you might think you've had a problem for 20 years, but does God know about that problem? Has he been counting the days? Has he been, you know, giving you the clock and showing, okay, fine, you're on day 24? No. The minute you get that light, that breakthrough, that infinite light that shows you, what are you worrying about? This is how God made you. You are his image and likeness. You are his perfect child. The minute that sinks in, there is instantaneous healing.
How do you think we can get there so that we can really see that more clearly?
I think we can, but it's going to take, well, it does take a lot of listening and a lot of putting away personal sense, because whenever you're dealing with a problem, like I know when I was dealing with mine, there's always this personal sense. Everybody else can get healed, but I can't.
Mm.
Why is everybody else walking so nicely and I can't walk? And there's always this feeling, it's poor little old me. I've got this problem and God knows nothing about it.
Right.
And that is the bugbear that has to go.
That's so interesting that you say that, because I don't know, about 15 years ago or so, I was having a lot of problems walking. And I remember I lived on a little island in Manhattan and I would have to take the little bus around this very small island because it was so hard to walk. And I would see these elderly, quite elderly people walking with walkers, and they were moving a lot faster than I was. And At first, I wasn't very happy about it. I thought, oh, you know, they're doing better than me, you know. But then I realized, well, they're an example for me, because what I've learned in Christian Science is that there's God and his spiritual idea, man. We're all, you know, unique expressions of God. But if those people could move quickly, what seemed quickly to me at the time, that was proof that I could too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that I wasn't outside of that. I wasn't left out.
No.
And that actually was one of the turning points in that experience where then eventually I was completely healed. So I hadn't thought of that before as being kind of a personal sense thing.
That is personal sense.
That is personal sense. Okay, so when you were dealing with this mobility issue you had, maybe you could give a quick recap of what happened there.
Oh, it was a long drawn-out thing, because I'd gone away from Christian Science and I got very resentful of people who were Christian Scientists, including my husband. And I didn't want anything to do with it. Any time the science thought would crop up, and it does, because the minute you have been taught Christian Science way of thinking, it doesn't let you go. But whenever a Christian Science thought would come up, I say, no, I don't want to know, don't want to hear. And I got resentful. And resentment is like a poison.
Mm-hmm.
It's a poison that you take yourself and you think everybody else is going to drop dead, but it doesn't happen and you wonder why. And the resentment built up and built up and built up until I realized that this poison was actually killing me. And being diagnosed by a doctor with some horrible terminal thing. They said, well, it wasn't going to kill you, but it was terminal in that you couldn't cure it. It was going to be managed with umpteen medications and whatever, but you would be in a wheelchair within 2 years and you would have to cope with that. The story was unbelievably depressing. And that year I had to go to Namibia for my son's wedding, and getting to the airport was extremely painful and I could hardly walk. And I thought, you know, I'm not going to spoil this child's wonderful day because I can't walk. And that was a turning point, because then I thought, now I've got to do something. And obviously the medical is not going to do anything. I have to turn back to the science. That's when I turned back to the science and started studying. And I realized that it was actually me. I was doing all this to myself. I was poisoning myself by being resentful and angry and bitter. And when that disappeared, when I started unraveling, Mrs. Eddy calls it unclasping the hold, little bit by little bit. It took me 2 years, but eventually I did get out of it.
So at least in your case, I think it sounds like the first thing that happened was that you had some humility.
Yeah, you could say that. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Humility is the first yeah. thing. And I was sadly lacking in humility because I wanted my own way.
Right.
And it was going to be my way or the highway. And that was that. But right. it wasn't working.
What were some of the lessons you learned along the way that might help somebody else who's dealing with something that has been in their life for a long time?
I think turn to God. Turn to the one that can help you. And again, remove personal sense. Remove the belief that there is some sort of power out there that can keep you out of that temple that is mentioned in Acts. You know, when Peter and John were walking into the temple and they had this man who'd been sitting there for many years, and he was begging for alms outside that temple of the Gate Beautiful. And what he was actually doing, he was asking for the recognition of his spiritual identity as the child of God. And everybody else saw him as disabled. He saw himself as disabled. So that became his identity.
Right.
But when Peter and John saw him, they saw the man that God had created. That's why they said, in the name of Jesus of Nazareth, rise up and walk. And he did. And then he went into the temple. And what we've got to realize is that you can never leave anyone outside that temple, not even yourself. You have to bring everyone into the temple until they realize they've always actually been there, walking and leaping and praising God.
Yeah, that's good. Mm-hmm. That's really good. So I had an experience once where I attended a Christian Science lecture. And when I walked in, there were some issues in my home. I had a cat that had cataracts and a recurring bronchial infection, and she was sick at that time. She looked really sad, you know, when I left that night. I thought, well, if I go to this lecture, I'll probably get a good idea that can maybe help me. I didn't have huge expectations. I just thought, maybe I'll get a good idea. But when I got home, either that night or the next morning, I realized that she didn't have the bronchial infection anymore, and she no longer had cataracts. And there were two other healings that escaped me at the moment, but kind of big things. And, you know, I was so grateful. I mean, it was such an amazing thing. And I remember I took notes during the lecture, and I went back and looked at them, and there wasn't anything that I hadn't known before. So I kind of wondered, like, well, what was it? And in this case, I feel like the church that put on this lecture, that they had really been praying for their community, and I was embraced in that. But then later, I started to wonder, how come some of the other problems that I have weren't healed? Why those, and why not some of the other ones? And what I walked away with was that I thought the other ones were part of who I was.
Mm-hmm.
the ones about the cat, well, I certainly did not think those were about me, you know? And even the other ones, whatever they weren't something that I kind of held to myself as being part of me. How do you think we can break that personal sense where we think, well, this is who I am. This is who I've been for a long time.
We have to learn to love ourselves. You know, we're told love your neighbor as yourself, but you cannot love your neighbor until you have learned to love yourself. And for some reason, and we all do it, we punish ourselves. We think, well, this is the way things are because I've done this or this or this wrong, so now I'm getting punished for it. Or, you know, I had a long walk this morning, so this afternoon I'm going to have sore feet.
Right.
We punish ourselves because we accept these limiting mortal conditions. And when it came to your cat, you just loved your cat.
Right.
And that was it. And that was as simple as that. And sometimes with healing, it is as simple as that.
Yeah.
You just use God's love to love with, and that is enough to enfold whoever you're thinking about in that divine love. And it's enough to lift that self-punishment that they seem to be struggling with, that they are incarcerated with.
Right. It seems to me that you're not intimidated by chronic problems.
No. No, because I've had cases with patients that have taken a long time to heal, sometimes up to a year and a half, 2 years as well. And the healing has been complete at the end of that time. It's just this gentle, gentle lifting out of the condition called the material condition.
Right.
And at the end of the day, they look back and they say, why was I ever that way? Why was I ever sick? You know, this is just not on. It's not man. And we're not meant to be miserable or sick or cancerous or whatever. We're not meant to be that way. God never made us that way. So why do we accept it?
I don't think that there's a good thing about chronic problems. Like, I don't think we have to think that we can only grow spiritually by going through a tough situation. But I do think that the lessons learned really bless our lives.
Yeah.
You know, that whatever you learn in that experience carries you forward in ways that you don't necessarily even imagine in the beginning. You know, sometimes in the beginning, you just want to feel better.
Yes.
But then feeling God feels better than feeling physically better.
Well, the spiritual growth is far more important. And that's what we need to see. Like with me, it was resentment. I had to see through that. And I had to, as you say, get a healthy dose of humility and realize that I wasn't the one in control.
And then you were eventually completely healed.
I was completely healed.
Yeah. And now helping other people.
Yes, now helping other people.
So have you had any other experiences that maybe took a little bit longer than you might have hoped?
Absolutely. Some years ago, before this nonsense with the walking started, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And it was painful and it was long and drawn out. And then I was told they have removed whatever was necessary and you can carry on. Several months back, this thing started again. And I discovered there was a mass that wasn't normal. And I immediately got very fearful because I thought, I'm not going down this road again. This is not happening. My father does not allow this. And so I contacted a Christian Science practitioner to help me with this. And it took a while. It took me about 2 months of just steadily praying and removing again any resentment, any feeling of built up anger or condemnation. And I realized I was actually very critical of some of our politicians as well. So I removed all that as well. anything that just was not God, I removed from my thinking. And I came across one hymn, I'm not sure of the number, you can probably look it up, where it said, healed is thy hardness, his love hath dissolved it. And I stuck with that because healed is thy hardness. I don't have any hardness. I don't have any conflict with anything or anyone because God is one. And in one, there's never conflict. Conflict is always two. So I worked along those lines. And within 2 months, that mass had disappeared. And it has not returned.
That's beautiful. So this happened before you became unhappy with Christian Science or after?
It was after.
It was after.
It was after, yeah.
Okay. Wow, that's inspiring.
It is, and I think people might be encouraged by that.
I think they'll be very encouraged. Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, it's time to wrap up, but before we go, whenever I talk to someone who's doing some really great things, and it does sound like you're one of those people, I want to know, what's next in your big life?
I don't know. I'll have to ask my father. I'll see what he wants. It's not what I want. It's what he wants and what he decides. Okay. You know, he perfects that which concerns me, and I'm happy with that. I'll take it one step at a time, whatever he wants me to do. That's
what I will
do. You know
it's going to be good.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, well, thank you so much for fitting us into your very busy schedule here in Boston. It's been wonderful to speak with you. I've been speaking with Martine Blackler, and Martine lives in Uvango, KwaZulu-Natal, South Africa. Sentinel Watch is a production of the Christian Science Sentinel. I'm your host and executive producer, Amy Richmond. The show is produced by Carlos Machado and Sophie Ungerleiter. Our editor is Lisa Rennie Seitzma. Our audio engineers are Tim Malone, Noel Flatt, Alyssa Britton, and Ian Case. Our theme music is by Jonah Bobo.
This podcast is produced and copyrighted by the Christian Science Publishing Society.